Welcome to Working in the Quarry, a Masonic education podcast brought to you by the Grand Lodge of Nebraska's Education Committee. Here you'll find audio versions of educational materials regularly distributed to Masons throughout the Nebraska jurisdiction, in addition to original content. Disclaimer: any views expressed in this podcast are those of the content creators and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Grand Lodge of Nebraska, its officers or lodges, or of Freemasons in this or any other jurisdiction. Please also note that the rituals, lectures, and customs of Freemasonry differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. Masons outside of Nebraska are encouraged to contact their education officers if they have any questions about the material presented here. Thank you. Now, on with this week's episode. Irreligious Libertine. The Masonic ritual was devised in the early 18th century and underwent refinement into the ritual we now use during the first half of the 19th century. While there have been some minor changes, on the whole it remains written in the language and style of the early 18th century. We often joke about how hard it is to get the rhythm and meaning of English from this time period, but we resist the urge to update the wording and syntax to 21st century standards. It is felt that changing that language would risk losing some or all of the original intent of the authors. And this is true, particularly when we look at word definitions. An often forgotten or ignored fact about the English language is that it is very fluid and constantly evolving. From a little-used commoner language, it has spread worldwide and dominates many areas of business and everyday life in many different countries. The challenge with English is that often the definition of a word and its use can and does change depending on the period of history in which it was used. An obvious example of this is the word charity, which nowadays is mostly connoted to mean giving of money or support, but in the 17th and 18th century had a much different meaning. Examples of words changing their meanings based on societal changes abound both in our ritual and in everyday life. In the obligation of the Master Mason's degree, one of the landmarks stated is that there is a certain class of people that cannot be made a Mason. The list is very specific and, for the most part, pretty common sense if you understand the history and intent of Masonry. But there is one class of person that most people are likely misinterpreting, and that is the irreligious libertine. When most of us hear or read that phrase, we think of a person of questionable morals, a party animal, or a low-class person, and on top of that behavior, they seem to have no faith in deity. And in fact, if you look up the two words irreligious and libertine, that impression of this person would be confirmed. The Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary defines these two words as follows. Irreligious. 1. Neglectful of religion. 2. Indicating lack of religion. Libertine. Disparaging term. A free thinker, especially in religious matters. Or 2. A person who is unrestrained by convention or morality. Specifically, one leading a dissolute life. So as people that were born in the 20th or 21st century, we feel well grounded in our opinion that an irreligious libertine is a pretty poor character to associate with, and it makes sense we would not want to make them a Mason. But is a morally questionable, dissolute, faithless man really what the authors of ritual were describing? A closer look at the history and use of the word libertine will reveal that there may have been a much different reason for including such a person in the list of non-acceptable candidates. The hunt for what might be the original intent begins in the 17th century. This was a time of much upheaval in Europe and England. The Reformation and the resulting religious wars, especially the Thirty Years' War, were quickly breaking the hegemony of the Roman Catholic Church over thought, philosophy, and science. Great minds such as Newton, Huygens, Descartes, and Pascal were openly proposing ideas, asking questions, and conducting experiments that less than a century before would have gotten them burned at the stake by the Church. The adoption of the scientific method, the weakening of the Church's ability to suppress thought and investigation, and the efforts of these new pioneers in thought to share and distribute this information, despite the constant upheaval of war, led to the development of a new term to describe these men. Liberty of the mind was now a recognized shift in society, and these men were described as having a free mind. This meant that they were thinking outside of and often rejecting the dogmatic ideas of the church, including taking a view of the Bible as being more allegory than literal fact. The word libertine is borrowed from the Latin libertinus, which meant freed man, and was used to denote a freed slave or the son of a freed slave. In the case of the men of the 17th century that were expanding the boundaries, the liberty and libertine referred to freedom from two very important constraints, the constraint of religious orthodoxy and the constraint imposed by the authority of the ancients, such as Aristotle or Augustine of Hippo. Soon the term libertine came into use to describe these freethinkers and natural philosophers. The term scientist didn't come into use until 1833, and it was a generally positive term. Times were changing, and the people of Europe and England were shaking off the chains of intellectual bondage imposed by the church, and the men doing so were seen as leaders into a brave new world by many. The church, however, did not see these new freethinkers in such a positive light. In addition, many of the new natural philosophers had talked themselves out of their faith, and so after some years, nearly all freethinkers were assumed to be atheist or labeled as atheist by the church. While this was true for some, it was certainly not the norm of men working in those fields at this time. It was felt that you could question the theology of the church but still have a faith in deity. Nonetheless, as time went by, the term libertine became more and more derogatory and associated with atheism, debauchery, sensuality, and depravity, which led to rumors and gossip about the morals of a libertine or free thinker, and the word became synonymous with a person of low morals and few limits as we use it today. By the middle of the 19th century, libertine was no longer a sought-after or welcome sobriquet. However, at the time our ritual was being authored, the word libertine would still have been a positive moniker, and as much of Masonic ritual is about learning, and what are often seen as Enlightenment ideas, such as religious tolerance, charity towards all mankind, and associated liberal ideas, why wouldn't you want to make a libertine a Mason? It would seem like a libertine, as defined at the time, would be a natural for inclusion in the craft. The answer lies in the word irreligious. If the phrase irreligious libertine were dissected using modern definitions, then it would seem to be a redundant phrase. It would be hard to be religious if you were a man of compromised morals, as the modern definition of libertine states, so adding the word irreligious doesn't give a better or sharper definition of the person you want to exclude. Now look at that phrase and the word libertine from the understanding of its definition in the 17th and 18th century. This is a completely different story. The problem isn't that the person is a libertine. In fact, it would seem to be an advantage. Being a freethinker and seeker of knowledge is part of the Masonic fabric. The problem is having no faith, being irreligious. While thematically Masonry promotes learning, self-reasoning, and innovation, it is always with an eye to remembering that everything is owed to deity in whatever form you wish to perceive it. Atheism is an anathema to the Masonic philosophy. The authors of Ritual appear to have been trying to make sure that the concept of debt to deity was not lost as men moved forward with the new and exciting quest for knowledge that was taking place at the time. We are introduced to this idea of faith plus reason in the Entered Apprentice Charge, where we are told, "There are three great duties which as a Mason you are charged to inculcate, to God, your neighbor, and yourself." To God, in never mentioning his name, but with that reverential awe which is due from a creature to his creator. This is merely one place that this obligation to deity is taught. Ritual is full of overt and covert examples of this important basic tenet. So it wasn't that Masonry didn't want intelligent, inquisitive, self-reasoning men. It was that Masonry didn't want men with those characteristics that had no faith. This phrase was a safety stop to separate out the growing number of philosophers and scientists that had abjured or lost their faith in the face of the new knowledge. It preserved one of the basic concepts of Masonry, that man can think and grow and learn, but still have a foundation in faith. Discussion questions. 1. How does this information change your understanding of the ritual? 2. Are there other words in the ritual that might have had a different meaning in the early days of Masonry? We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Working in the Quarry, an educational podcast brought to you from the Education Committee of the Grand Lodge of Nebraska. We'd like to thank our podcast content creators and readers. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please send them to educationchairman@nebraskagrandlodge.com. Thank you for listening.